Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, can Islam defeat famine?
A self-proclaimed feminist organization, which protests for the rights and freedom of women, has turned its topless protest towards Islam. Femen, which has been in the news for its controversial and shocking forms of protest since 2008, recently began its campaign to support Tunisian activist Amina Tyler, a 19-year-old Muslim who spread outrage by posting topless images of herself online with the words, "My body belongs to me." But Femen has not gone unchallenged, and Muslim women across the East and West have responded to the outrageous protest with their own opinions on the movement. Thousands, if not millions, of Muslim women denounce Femen across social media platforms, saying, "We reject Femen's Islamophobic and neo-colonialist crusade to save us." This week's Islam and Life asks, can Islam defeat Femen?
To advocate women's rights is one thing. To do it in a way where, in fact, behind the scene, but quite clearly and explicitly, all the campaign is targeting Muslims and Muslim women, and the very essence of the Islamic principles is another thing. And Femen today is directing all the campaigns and all the protests against Islam, some of the values, and making it clear that all what they do in the name of women is in fact against Islam, as if Islam in itself is against women's rights and against the dignity of women. And this is where there is a problem. This is where all these campaigns and these protests and these controversies should see coming from the Muslim side, and this is what happened during the last weeks and months, voices that are saying and responding to such campaign, to such protest, to such Islamophobic campaign behind the whole advocacy of women's rights. So this is an essential discussion, essential questions that we have to tackle. What should come from the Muslim side, so to speak, from Muslim women and men when it comes to Islamic principles? Well, to answer all these questions, I'm joined by the founder of the Muslima Pride campaign, Sofia Ahmed. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
These are very difficult times because not only we are dealing with all the things about, you know, the war on terror, the Muslim terrorist and Islamic reference, the perspective and what we have as to the perception of Islam is quite negative. Now we have women coming and in the name of protesting and advocating women's rights, Femen is in fact, and this is clear now over the last year, that they are targeting Islam and Islamic teachings. So how would you define and how do you understand what Femen is in the whole political landscape?
I don't think that Femen are anything new. If we look back towards the beginning of the war in Afghanistan, we look at Laura Bush, we look at, I think it was Sherry Blair, they both came out on a feminist platform and actually provided kind of ideological foregrounding for that war in Afghanistan, and it was labelled as a, you know, a feminist crusade. They were going to go in there, they were going to save the women and emancipate these women that needed the Western support. And I think that it just leads on from that, and Femen are just kind of jumping onto that bandwagon, and over the last 10, 15 years.
But what is new in this? Because what you were saying is that, in fact, you know, to go in a country and to colonize a country for the sake of women's rights is not new. Colonizers were doing the same in the 19th century, in the beginning of the 20th century. And now what you are saying about what happened in Afghanistan is exactly the same rationale behind it, is in fact colonizing in the name of freeing some of the people or civilizing them. Now, still, between what we saw in Afghanistan and what FEMIN is doing in the way they are playing with media, in the way they are campaigning with topless campaign and even using Islamic words, now with jihad and all this, this is new. So how do you understand this shift in their way of doing things?
I think, obviously, it's typical of anything. It's a top-down thing. So it's gone from a political speech or a political act down to a societal level where grassroots activists such as FEMIN have decided that, you know, they're going to join this crusade and they want to save us. And essentially, that's what's happened. It's gone down onto a societal level where people from FEMIN to far-right groups are using this in a way to attack Islam and attack Muslims. So they use this so-called plight of the Muslim women in order to forward their own negative stereotypes about Muslim women.
Yes, so you were the founder of, you know, the Muslimah Pride, but also a campaign which in fact was a response to what was coming from FEMIN. So you decided that enough was enough and something should be done. So what is the starting point of your reaction? Why did you decide that this is the time for you to do something?
I think me and my friends, we discussed FEMIN's activities before. We were quite worried about the message that they were sending out. They were reinforcing negative stereotypes about Muslim women, you know, speaking on behalf of us as opposed to with us. And a lot of the people that have joined the campaign consider themselves feminists, but they want to look at feminism in an intersectional way. And we didn't feel as if FEMIN were doing this. So we'd been discussing their activities for a while. It was only when they actually launched this topless jihad day, which we found highly insulting, you know, asking Muslim women to take our clothes off and to join them, and that's the only way that we can emancipate ourselves, was insulting for us. So we decided to start up this campaign, and a few friends of mine, we started to upload messages to FEMIN and say, look, this is what we feel, this is what we're thinking, here's our voice, listen to us. And that's how it set off, really, and it became a worldwide movement.
So now your movement is a worldwide movement, it's coming from everywhere?
We've had people from Brazil, from Indonesia, Australia, as far as Canada, all over the world, from the Middle East, from Tunisia itself, Pakistan. So we've had media outlets from all of these countries getting in touch with us, but also individuals with Muslim women who never had a voice before are coming out and saying, look, this is a platform for us, and this is how we feel about FEMIN, or this is how we feel about Western feminists kind of adopting this certain narrative about us, and that's not true, and this is us, we're here to give them a different viewpoint of the situation.
So meaning, in fact, you don't want to make it only something which is Muslim women responding to FEMIN?
Definitely not. I think one of the things that we do realise is that Muslims, we have a very reactionary situation going on. So people in the West, they kind of, we get attacked, then we react to it, then we get attacked again and we react to it. And that doesn't give us any space to actually get our point across or speak about who we are or change any stereotypes, because we're constantly trying to bat away these attacks. And for us, that's one of the major issues that we've got. So what we want to do, carrying on from this, is say, look, this is a platform for Muslim women across the world to finally be heard, to finally get our voices across, to finally try and change, you know, the perception.
But it's still a reaction. It's still a reaction, no?
It's a reaction to FEMIN, but we intend on actually using the Muslim Pride hashtag to kind of project an image of Muslim women that nobody's ever seen before. There's been so much interest in the West from people, individuals, and also the media in terms of, look, we've never had Muslim women on this scale speaking about their lives or speaking about what they think about global politics or societal problems. And I think that for us, that's the ideal opportunity to get our point across.
In fact, what you are saying, you reacted to what they did, but now you want to go beyond that and to say that's not the problem. This is maybe just an obstacle, but we want our message to come across as Muslim women with our principles. Now, In the clip, what we saw is that the Femen went to Tunisia supporting this woman who just appeared topless on internet, and this was a big controversy. My point is this one. If we go to the substance, she wrote something which is known by the feminist movement, and the perception is this one when it comes to Islam as women, and you need, as women, if you want to go beyond reaction, to come with a clear message of who you are as a Muslim woman and what you stand for. My body belongs to me.
Right.
And she appeared topless. What would be your answer by saying, no, look, this is the Islamic answer to this. This is the way we look at the problem.
I think that was one of our reasons for actually getting this problem out. My body belongs to me. If I choose to dress the way I dress, if I choose to wear the hijab, nobody has got the right to tell me I shouldn't be able to wear it. I mean, we've had a lot of negative kind of feedback saying, oh, look, people in the Muslim world, women in the Muslim world are forced to wear the hijab, forced to wear the veil. And these are like some of the prevailing stereotypes. But if you go to the Muslim world, which I doubt Femen has actually done, I don't think they are the main problems for Muslim women. Wearing the hijab is not a problem. They have so many different problems that they could be focusing on, and so many issues that Femen could be looking at or we could be looking at. And the veil seems to be this big controversy that has nothing to do with, you know, trying to actually change things for Muslim women in the Muslim world.
It's just the visible side of
the
story.
It is. It's very superficial and it's very simplistic as well.
But would you, for example, you, Sophia Ahmed, who you are a Muslim, you are a believer, and you are campaigning now for a better understanding of what the Muslim women and who they are and what they stand for. Would you say, for example, my body belongs to me, so this is why I'm dressing. This is why I'm dressing the way I'm dressing.
I think in Islam, obviously you have that individuality, but Islam is very much a community religion. It's very much like it believes in the one, the Ummah. So your body does belong to you, but your body does belong to the Ummah as well. So there's that collective feeling about having to have certain rules in society and stuff. So I would say, you know, that's an option for us. We take that option. When we actually take our faith or we say, look, we decided to wear the hijab, we don't do it on an individual basis. We do it for the Ummah. For me, personally, I can only speak on a personal platform. I never wore the hijab till I was quite old. And it's no coincidence that I decided to adopt the hijab during the controversy in France when they banned the veil. For me, it was an act of kind of defiance almost to say, look, you don't tell me how to dress. You don't tell me what to do with my body. This is me. This is my religion. And it's pushed me towards doing that. And also, if you look in the West, I don't think that it's also a coincidence that since 9/11, since the so-called war on terror, more and more women, especially in the UK, have decided to adopt the hijab and wear it on a public platform.
So, but what did this mean? For example, that this is a reaction, because you said something quite interesting at the beginning. You say, I have individual rights, but I have collective responsibility towards the community or towards the society.
Yeah.
So this is the way you put it in essence. This is the way you respond to Femen. But at the same time, you are saying the more you are attacking, the more we react with our identity as Muslims. And this is exactly what Femen is saying, by the way.
Yeah.
They say, in fact, you are more Muslim, not because this is Islam, but this is a political answer to attacks from outside. Would you say that this is the way you see it?
I don't think that Femen are coming from that point of view.
They said it many times. They said it that, in fact, it's a political stand. This is not really Islam. It's sometimes one religious interpretation, but it's also politicized in the way you are dealing. So they are responding with ideology to ideology.
Okay.
So what would you respond to this?
I don't think that it was a case of kind of a reactionary I've just said that it was a reactionary thing, but I think whenever you attack any identity, people are going to try and kind of get closer to it. That's expected. That's happened throughout history. It's not, you know, we could talk about the veil in Algeria during the Algerian Revolution. You know, the French, they tried to unveil the women, and women actually saw that as a form of resistance. So they started adopting the veil, and it became a form of resistance. And that's how, for me, this is a form of resistance. It's a resistance against this backlash and this kind of hatred towards Islam. And I don't think that that's necessarily totally reactionary, negatively reactionary.
Yeah, positive reaction.
It's a positive reaction.
Yes. So now if you have to think about what women should do, because you launched this campaign hoping that Muslim women will come on board and struggle with you, strive for a better understanding, what you think should be the answer coming from Muslims to what Femen is doing and other targeting Muslims?
I think for me, one of the biggest problems is the misrepresentation of Muslim women. I think that's what's caused all of this problem, all of these problems thinking between the West and Islam. Muslim women have been their voices have been removed. They're never heard from. You know, whenever we see somebody speaking about us on the media, it's either a man or it's either kind of like Western women or somebody else. I very rarely see Muslim women representing us. And when I say Muslim women, I mean women who wear the veil, who actually openly, you can see that they're Muslim. And in the Western media, we hardly ever see that. We hardly ever see the voices coming through from Western women, but also from women within the Muslim world or the non-Muslim world. And that's an issue for me, because I think that that's where it would start from, to build dialogue, to get Muslim women to come out and say, look, these are your stereotypes, this is what you think about us. But in actual fact, this is the actual opposite of what the reality is. And so many years now, Muslim women sit there and they hear all these things being thrown at them. We've become this cultural icon. You know, it's quite easy to fix these sets of, you know, labels to us. And we've not had the ability or the platform to say, well, no, this isn't the case. And I think that it starts from that.
But what would you say to the people who say this is exactly the problem? You are not vocal because women are discriminated, and this is why we don't see enough women speaking. So you are confirming the point that they are making by saying, you are not here to explain yourself. You are not here to tell us what is the message of Islam.
I think that we were discriminated by the Muslim world. I mean, if we look at the Muslim world, we could see women in every aspect of life. We've had, you know, Muslim women leaders of countries, from Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, all of this. So it's not the case of, like, we don't have that voice in the Muslim world, because we do. It's just that we don't have that voice in the Western world. We're not given that voice. Because of existing stereotypes that have been there for centuries, probably from the Crusades since then, we've always been kind of subalternized almost and in the West. But I don't think that that's the reality in
but
the
Muslim world. You would say in other non-Western countries, Muslim women are more hurt? Would you say that?
I would say so. Yeah.
You would say they are heard in other countries, but still they are not heard here.
Obviously, we do have issues within the Muslim world. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to sit here and become an apologist for, you know, patriarchy in the Muslim world, because we do have issues there. But I don't think that it's the way that is projected in the Western world. You know, in the Western world, within the Western psyche, within the Western way of thinking, Muslim women have always been these docile, passive, you know, subordinate.
So the perception
women
is very negative
it
on
is,
this.
It is.
How would you compete with a group of women choosing, for example, to go very, very quickly and straightforward to media controversy by being topless and attracting attention in the media? And you, on the other side, you want to be vocal, you want to be heard. You are talking much more about the substance. They are going to talk much more about the image.
Yep.
So what could you do to change this and make your voices being heard?
For me, Femen seem to come across as quite gimmicky. And with the media, it is a superficial kind of place, and it will actually look at that and it'll give them the coverage that they need. But it gets old very quickly. So how long are they going to actually keep doing this? Because obviously, at first, the shock tactics work. They'll get all the media attention that they need. But essentially, they don't have any substance whatsoever. I mean, when we wrote them a public letter, we provided a critical kind of discussion for them. We criticised them. We gave them all the information. You know, we did it quite from a deep level. And all we got back was kind of really reactionary base level understanding. At one point they said, oh, you know, they hold up signs, but in their eyes we can see that they want us to help them. They've got men with long beards behind them, with daggers behind them, forcing them into doing this. And this is the only response that we got. And I think that will die down, because the media, like you said, it likes controversy, but after a bit it gets boring. How many times are they going to go out topless and get the media attention that they're getting now? I think that it will wear out, but we'll still be here and we'll still be providing that intellectual discussion, that dialogue that we have been doing from the beginning of this campaign. And we're very hopeful that it'll change things, both in the Western world, but also give a voice for Muslim women across the Muslim world as well to engage with the
people. That's a very fair point. It might be that their strategy will attract attention for a while, and you are working on the long run. Just a last question. Do you have many people of other faith working with you now? You can see that they are coming, or it's still something which is mainly a Muslim reaction?
During our campaign, I was actually quite shocked at the level of people from across the world that actually gave us kind of feedback and said, we're so glad that you're doing this. It's the first time we're hearing from Muslim women. We're so glad that you're getting up and standing up and doing this. There's Western feminist groups that are quite active on the internet, who made a video and said, look, these are Muslim women, thank God they're here to do this. And we've had a lot of response from non-Muslims across the world to our campaign, and they've congratulated us on it. So it's always a good thing.
Thank you so much. I think that you made very important and critical points in the whole discussion that we had today. First, by saying that what is needed now is Muslim women voices to be heard and to take a stand when it comes to Femen and others who are targeting Muslims, who are targeting women, by saying, with all what is visible, and it's quite important, the visibility is a critical factor here, because the visibility of the headscarf, the visibility of Muslim practices, and these are things that are targeted. And the last thing that you added, which is important, is to be patient and to struggle for the rights to be heard and also to be respected, because they might use media strategies to attract attention, but this could die down very quickly, while your campaign should carry on. And the last point, which is also important, is they have people of other faith now understanding, and they might be surprised by the substance of what you have to say, as opposed to the images and provoking images that they are spreading around. And I think that this is an important endeavor. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Sophia Ahmad. Thank you so much for your presence and your input. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.